Now, if you remember, the last time we were looking at some sibling rivalry and the expansion of the family of Jacob, which was inevitable because of God's promise, was brought about in spite of the behavior of the people in the family, most specifically Rachel and Leah. They got into this weird baby-making context, trying to gain Jacob's favor, which is really unnecessary. And although it did expand the family, if they had trusted God, the family still would have been expanded, but without a lot of the problems that they faced. Now, in chapter 30, the expansion of the family is going to continue. Because what happens is Rachel and Leah give their maids to Jacob, and according to custom, not according to the Bible, they could be considered the children of Jacob and either Rachel or Leah. So, notice what it says, the expansion, on page 116. The expansion of the family of Jacob continues. Now, we're not going to read verses 1-24, that covers the whole thing, but we're going to take it in chunks. In chapter 29, 31-35, Moses recorded the births of Jacob's first four sons through his wife Leah: Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah. And remember, we did note that one of the things that's significant here is that both the priesthood and the royal line of kings came from Leah. Now, let's read verses 1 through 8, because this competition is not yet ended. Now, when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, because she became jealous of her sister, and she said to Jacob, this to me is the most hilarious statement in the Bible, "Give me children or else I die." I don't know where she's coming from. Then Jacob's anger burned against Rachel, and he said, "Am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb?" She said, "Here is my maid Bilhah. Go into her that she may bear on my knees, and that through her I too may have children." And again, in those days, that was recognized as a legal transaction, for lack of a better word. So she gave him her maid Bilhah as a wife, and Jacob went into her. Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. Then Rachel said, "God has vindicated me. God has vindicated me." That could be translated "judged me," "and has indeed heard my voice and has given me a son." Therefore, she named him Dan, which is "he judged." So you can see they're still naming children after circumstances at hand. So Rachel's maid Bilhah conceived again and bore Jacob a second son. So Rachel said, "With mighty wrestlings I have wrestled with my sister, and I indeed prevailed." And she named him Naphtali. So his name is Naphtali. Okay, let's go to the notes. Page 116. The sons of Rachel through Bilhah. Now remember what happens here. This is not in our society, but in that society it was a custom that if a woman's maid bore children through the woman's husband, that child became her child. And we see that with Sarah and Hagar, same thing. Rachel was barren. She was jealous of Leah's fertility, felt wronged over her barrenness. Right away, you can see there's a little lapse of faith there, because God opens the womb and God closes the womb and God blesses. So she should have had the spiritual insight to know that if God chooses at this time to close her womb, trust him. He will only do right. In order to compensate for her barrenness, Rachel gave her maid Bilhah to Jacob as his wife. She reasoned that any children born to Jacob through Bilhah would be the equivalent of children she had born. This was an ancient, misguided form of surrogacy, and we have to be very, very careful, because the Mormons use verses like this and other verses to affirm a man marrying multiple women. You know, Abraham was married to Hagar and Sarah, and here's Jacob. He has four wives now. But we've got to remember, just because the Bible says that our forefathers did something doesn't mean they were doing the right thing. In many cases, they did the wrong thing. But God graciously, and because of his faithfulness to the Abrahamic covenant, protected them. So, whereas Leah exhibited genuine faith during her great affliction, Rachel's son through Bilhah did not reflect the faith Leah had. Her attempt to have children through her maidservant reflects Sarah's similar attempt with Hagar. And the key here is, with Abraham and Sarah, God had made a promise, and that promise was being tested. Rachel should have known to trust God because of what had happened in the past. He doesn't change. And also because God's timing is better than our timing. If God determines that a woman should have a child at the age of 40, and the woman at the age of 30 is impatient and goes out and does whatever they do to make a woman have a baby, that's outside of the will of God. Now, God can bless, he can do whatever he chooses, but it's wrong for us to say no matter what we do, God's going to bless us, because there are consequences to what we do, and there are consequences here as well. Whereas Leah exhibited, Bilhah gave Jacob two sons. The names of the two sons born to Bilhah reflect Rachel's bitter struggle and feeling of victory. The name Dan is explained by the word Danani. God has vindicated me. That is, he now had corrected Rachel's wrong, her barrenness. And Rachel seems to have a feeling that many of us get. Lord, why me? Many of us don't, I mean, we can't really see through God's eyes, but how many times do we, I know I do it, complain to the Lord, why are you bringing this upon me? I haven't done anything wrong. But the fact of the matter is, if we trust God, we will realize that what seems to go in one direction in the heart of man may very well go in another direction in the heart of God. And as a matter of fact, it does say in the Bible, God says in the Bible, my ways are not your ways, and my thoughts are not your thoughts. So that's why we don't want to stand in the place of God, because his thoughts, in being different from ours, what is the difference? They're higher. and they're always right. That's why we want to, as best we can, know what the Bible teaches and follows it, because these are the words of God. If we're following the Bible, if we're following the Word of God, we know that we're doing God's will. The name Naphtali reflected her great struggle, Naphtali, when I fought with my sister. Not to be outdone, now there's going to be some children of Leah through Zilpah. This is like a TV sitcom or something. Leah responded to what Rachel had done by offering her maidservant Zilpah, to whom Gad, fortune, and Ashrei, blessing, were born. Leah saw that with God's help, she was prospering. Now you can see a difference in attitude here. It seems as though Leah had a heart towards God, although still it was not necessary for her to send her maidservant into Jacob. She should have trusted the Lord that in the Lord's time she would bear children. Now there's more children through Rachel. Reuben, Jacob's firstborn, found some mandrake plants, which were supposedly aphrodisiacs. And Rachel thought they would work for her. Let me see something real quickly. Rachel thought they would work for her. Thus Leah hired Jacob with the plants, that is, purchased a night with Jacob from Rachel. You picture poor Jacob's coming in from a hard day's work, and one of his wives come up and says to him, I bought you, you gotta sleep with me tonight. He must have been dizzy. Notice I started at the beginning of the chapter to pick up the context, because it's only a page and a half. Thus Leah had a son named Issachar. Issachar is explained by Skartica, my hire. The name of Leah's sixth and final son was Zebulun. Zebulun has the double significance of dowry or gift as well as honor. Leah said God gave her Zebulun as a gift and her husband would treat her with honor. Then Dinah, a girl, was born to Leah. This is some big family you're getting here. Then there's another child born through Rachel. Finally, Rachel gave birth to Joseph. Yosef is the way it's pronounced in Hebrew. But not by mandrakes. This shows that births are given by God, not manipulated by people. Joseph's name, like Zebulun's, had a double meaning. Rachel said, God has taken away Asap, which is similar to Yosef, my disgrace, and she prayed that God would add Yosef, another son. Finally, Rachel was jubilant, looking in faith for another child from God. Observations. This passage is a combination of small narratives accenting the puns on Jacob's sons' names. Each name was interpreted by Leah or Rachel to reflect concrete family conditions at the price of the pious substance which they had as testimonies to God as the giver of life. So they were off track here. Bear in mind, though, these names were not prophetic. They were descriptive. Certainly, the passage shows how God prospered Jacob and started to make from them a great nation. However, we've got to remember that he could have done it without all these deceptive, I don't want to call them fights, but struggles amongst his wives. God doesn't need us to have fulfilled what he has declared. To Israel, these narratives were more than interesting little stories. The rivalry that appears here explains much of the tribal rivalry that followed. But Genesis is clear. God chose the despised mother, Leah, and exalted her to be the first mother. The last shall be first, and the first shall be last. The kingly tribe of Judah and the priestly tribe of Levi trace back to her in spite of Jacob's love for Rachel and her son Joseph. Okay, now new material. The expansion of Jacob at the expense of Laban. And first we're going to read verses 25 through 36. Jacob decides to leave Laban, and Laban tries to convince him to stay. So it's verses 25 through 36. Now it came about when Rachel had borne Joseph that Jacob said to Laban, "Send me away that I may go to my own place and to my own country. Give me my wives as my children for whom I have served you, and let me depart, for you yourself know my service which I have rendered you." Bear in mind, before Jacob came, Laban was not a wealthy man, and now he was a very wealthy man, and it was due to the labors of Jacob. Laban seems to be a lazy man. Jacob was a hard worker. But Laban said to him, "Now, if it pleases you, stay with me. I have divined that the Lord has blessed me on your account." He continued, "Name me your wages, and I will give it." But he said to him, "You yourself know how I have served you and how your cattle have fared with me. For you had little before I came, and it has increased to a multitude, and the Lord has blessed you wherever I turned. But now, when shall I provide for my own household also?" So he said, "What shall I give you?" And Jacob said, "You shall not give me anything." Now here's the condition that Jacob places. "If you will do this one thing for me, I will again pasture and keep your flock. Let me pass through your entire flock today, removing from there every speckled and spotted sheep and every black one among the lambs, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and such shall be my wages." They were considered as lesser value than like a pure white, you know, beautiful lamb. "So my honesty will answer for me later. When you come concerning my wages, every one that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and black among the lambs, if found with me, will be considered stolen." Essentially saying, Laban, you'll have proof what's yours and what's mine. There'll be no, we won't have to argue about who has more and why do they have more. Laban said, "Good, let it be according to your word." So he removed on that day the striped and the spotted male goats and all the speckled and spotted female goats, every one with white on it, and all the black ones among the sheep, and gave them into the care of his sons. Now this illustrates how much he trusted Jacob, even in spite of this guarantee. And he put a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob, and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. He didn't trust Jacob at all. He wanted a barrier between them. Okay, going back to 118. When Jacob appealed to Laban for permission to return home, Laban argued for him to stay. This was an example of Oriental diplomacy. Two Bedouin leaders cautiously on guard as they negotiated. Laban stated that he had learned by divination. Divination is a what we might call, it's similar to sorcery. is somewhat similar to sorcery. It's not a godly, you know, back in those days when people would involve themselves in divination, they usually would use household idols. That God had prospered him because of Jacob. He may have looked from omens or may simply perceive what God's will was in this matter. Dark-colored sheep were considered an omen for good, and perhaps an inordinate amount of them spoke of this. Jacob agreed that God had blessed Laban. Jacob proposed a plan by which, ostensibly, he would gain little. He would receive wages for his work. That's not typed right. He would receive his wages for his work. No, it's okay. The black and multicolored goats. That's the rarer kind. Black and multicolored were more rare. And the speckled and spotted sheep, which would be born. So in a sense, based on their beliefs, the kind of sheep that Jacob was going to get didn't multiply as rapidly as the kind of sheep Laban was going to get. So Laban was fine with it. And the proof was right there. Look at that sheep. We can tell whether it's mine or yours. So it's kind of like a way of keeping Jacob honest. Laban thought this over and quickly closed the deal. He could see only advantages for himself. Jacob's plan was very risky. Nevertheless, he was looking out for his own interests, as should be for, hoping to prosper of this. Notice something. So far, up to this point, there really does not yet seem to be an indication of a change in the character of Jacob that we're waiting for. But Laban's ploy added to the risk Jacob was taking. For greater security, Laban removed all the animals of abnormal color, giving them to his sons and not to Jacob. So Laban here is the one who's being the thief. As an additional precaution, he placed a 3 days' journey between them. Thus, he was seeking to ensure that Jacob would have a difficult time acquiring a large herd, which also meant that Jacob was not going to leave very quickly. He couldn't go off on his own, a poor man. Okay, God blesses Jacob, verses 37 through 43. Then Jacob took fresh rods of poplar and almond and plane trees and peeled white stripes in them, exposing the white which was in the rods. He set the rods which he had peeled in front of the flocks in gutters, even in the watering troughs where the flocks came to drink, and they mated when they came to drink. So the flocks mated by the rods, and the flocks brought forth speckled, striped, and spotted. Jacob separated the lambs and made the flocks face toward the striped, and all the black in the flock of Laban, and he put his own herds apart and did not put them with Laban's flocks. Moreover, when the stronger of the flock were mating, Jacob would place the rods in the sight of the flock in the gutters so that they might mate by the rods. But when the flocks were feeble, he did not put them there, so the feebler were Laban's and the stronger were Jacob's. So the man became exceedingly prosperous and had large flocks and female and male servants and camels and donkeys. So Laban's deceptive plan to bring about wealth for himself and not wealth to Jacob failed. Now, I've often been asked, What effect do these rods have on the mating of sheep? I don't believe they have any effect, and I think it's been tried. I think that this was maybe a superstition or so forth. However, we got to remember that God was at work here. And if God has a purpose, if I do right, God's purpose will be accomplished. If I do wrong, God's purpose will be accomplished too, although I will not receive a possible blessing. And God's purpose now, let's put it this way, according to God's mind, the time was nearing when Jacob would return. Remember, he left his homeland? And in order to prepare him to return, God had to prosper him first. So I think this was a work of God and a superstition on the part of man. Okay. God blesses Jacob, verses 37 through 43. Wait, I read that part. Oh. Let's see, where did we stop? Okay, God blesses Jacob, 37 to 43. We're in the notes. God blessed Jacob in an unusual way. Jacob was blessed. But let me skip down to the bottom just so we can see it now. Look what 13b says. Afterward, however, Jacob viewed his real gain as divine blessing, though he had to accept the effects, fear, and danger of his craftiness. So Jacob ultimately did give the glory to God, and the irony is, he didn't have to do that. He didn't have to put himself at risk at all. He could have left Laban with the small herd that he had and his family, and God would have gotten them back to his land, because God had promised. But Jacob was not resting on the promises of God. When we're asked by God to do something, and he tells us, go to so-and-so, and there I will have you witness to so-and-so. God, it's raining yet. I can't drive in the rain. If God tells you to go, that's where you go. Now, of course, I have a friend who used to say to me, I trust God, but I wear my seatbelt. We don't want to tempt the Lord. We want to trust the Lord. There's a big difference. God blessed Jacob in an unusual way. Here there is a wordplay on the name Laban. For as Jacob peeled back the bark on the sticks and exposed the white, Laban, he saw his flocks grow. He played the Laban game and won. In other words, he agreed to everything Laban had said. Laban expected one result, and the exact opposite result took place. The peeled branches placed in the watering trails appeared to make his animals reproductive as they mated in front of the trails. In addition, Jacob used selective breeding by mating the stronger animals for himself and the weak female goats and sheep for Laban. Now that can have some truth behind it. That can have some truth behind it. But the mere fact that the branches were peeled or not, I don't think there's any scientific evidence for that. But this was not the only time God's part in Jacob's success was much greater than it seemed to an observer. So Jacob was greatly prospered in fulfillment of God's promise at Bethel. Remember at Bethel, the promise God made to him? And at the expense of Laban, who now received in part the recompense due him. Laban thought he was a great negotiator, but he didn't realize, although it appeared in his dealings with Jacob that he was really dealing with God. A fascinating struggle developed between Jacob and Laban. Laban's injustice and artifice preceded Jacob's project, just as Isaac's attempt to bless Esau had prompted Jacob's deception. In both cases, the attempt to defraud Jacob was actually overcome by Jacob. Afterward, however, Jacob viewed his real gain as divine blessing, though he had to accept the effects, fear, and danger of his craftiness. What was he afraid of? Laban could have said, I don't know what you did. I don't know why you have so many sheep, but they belong to me. Right? Or, don't forget that Jacob wanted to leave. He may have stopped them from leaving. You leave and I'll kill you. He was more powerful than Jacob militarily. So there was some danger to be involved here. Okay, chapter 31. By the way, what I just read, that B, is specifically stated more clearly in the next chapter. Okay, chapter 31. Here we go. And we're going to read the first 16 verses. Now Jacob heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what belonged to our father, he has made all this wealth. Jacob saw the attitude of Laban, and behold, it was not friendly towards him as formerly. Imagine that. Imagine if we both live on the same land, and there's a portion of the land where we find a fair amount of gold. And on the other side of a creek that runs through the land, we don't find much gold. And you have your family you have to care for, plus you're somewhat lazy, so I say to you, look, I'll dig out the gold, and all the gold that comes from your land, I will stamp with your stamp. Or you can have one of your men stamp it with your stamp, so you know it's yours better yet. The gold that comes out of my land, which obviously will be far less, will also be stamped with a stamp. And as I start doing that, I discover there's a vein of gold just 2 feet under my land that's worth millions of dollars. You're going to be upset. And you're going to blame me. I'm the one who's going to get the blame for it. You're going to think, what did that guy do? What did he know? People very rarely blame themselves for their own misfortunes. Okay, so. Now Jacob heard the words of Laban's son, saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what belonged to our father, he has made all this wealth. What they were really, really concerned about was their inheritance, you know. Jacob saw the attitude of Laban, and behold, it was not friendly towards him as formerly. Then the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I will be with you. Now, what could Jacob have done at that point? Confidently left and returned to the land of his fathers, knowing he would get there safely, which God said so. So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to his flock in the field and said to them, I see your father's attitude that it is not friendly toward me as formerly, but the God of my father has been with me. You know that I served your father with all my strength, yet your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times. However, God did not allow him to hurt me. You can see slowly but surely there's a change taking place in Jacob's attitude towards life, towards God, and towards the circumstances. You know that I have served your father with all my strength. Oh, I just read that. If he spoke thus, the speckled sheep shall be your wages, then all the flock brought forth speckled. And if he spoke thus, the stripes shall be your wages, then all the flock brought forth striped. Thus God has taken away your father's livestock and given them to me. I didn't do anything. I have no control what's going to come out of a sheep's womb. And it came about at that time when the flocks were mating that I lifted up my eyes and I saw in a dream, and behold, the male goats which were mating were striped, speckled, and mottled. Then the angel of God said to me in a dream, who's the angel of God? The Messiah, pre-incarnate, Jacob. And he said, here I am. He said, lift up now your eyes and see that all the male goats which are mating are striped, speckled, and mottled. For I have seen all that Laban has been doing to you. In other words, what Laban thought would happen to make him prosperous, God reversed. He made the exact opposite happen. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar, where you made a vow to me. Now arise, leave this land, and return to the land of your birth. So it's time for him to go back home now. Now, bear in mind that Jacob should have absolutely no problem with doing that, because God has already promised them to protect them as he leaves the land, as he travels around, and as he goes back to the land. He said, no problem with that. Now, remember, he's saying all this to Rachel and Leah in explaining to him why he wants to do what he wants to do. Rachel and Leah said to him, do we still have any portion of or inheritance in our father's house? Are we not reckoned by him as foreigners? For he has sold us and has also entirely consumed our purchase price. Their dowry, his father consumed it. So they didn't have any real love for their father at this point. Surely all the wealth which God has taken away from our father belongs to us and our children. Now then, do whatever God has said to you. Okay, moving over to the notes. Jacob left Laban to go to Canaan for two reasons. First, animosity by Laban's sons was growing against Jacob, and Laban's mood was dangerous. Second, God told Jacob to return to his own land. This was a divine call to leave for the promised land. Jacob gave a wonderful speech to his two wives. He laid it right out before him. He wanted to take with him... Jacob gave a wonderful speech to his two wives who met him at his request when he called them out to the fields. Notice at this point in time, Jacob was not ready for Laban to know any about, so he met him out in the field. This was more than self-defense. He wanted to take with him a willing family, so he testified about God's leading and provision. The last thing he needed, if he was going on a dangerous trip away from Laban, was dissension among his family. So he explained to his family what he was doing, his why. And his wives had no problem with that because there was no love lost between them and their father. As far as Rachel and Leah was concerned, their father had done them wrong. Jacob must now keep the vow he made at Bethel. Now turn back to 28 so we can have that fresh in our minds. Chapter 28. Start from verse 20. Here's the vow. Then Jacob made a vow saying, if God will be with me and will keep me on this journey that I take and will give me food to eat and garments to wear, that's all he's asking for, and I return safely to my father's, return to my father's house in safety, then the Lord will be my God. This stone which I have set up as a pillar will be God's house, and all of all that you give me, I will surely give a tenth to you. So this is the vow that Jacob made to God. So long as you keep me safe, I am going to do according to your will. And of course, God always keeps his end of a bargain. Both women responded in faith. Laban had exploited his daughter's wealth and had lost their goodwill, so they were both willing to leave their father. So the flight began, but it was more risky should be then than Jacob thought it would be. Because Rachel has stolen Laban's household gods. Jacob didn't know about this. But of course Laban found out when he saw they were missing and figured, well, obviously, where did they go? They stole them before they left.
That's
sad.
Household gods.
Yeah, household gods.
It's
like a... Yeah. So this shows the pagan influence in Jacob's family. Remember, his daughters grew up in this setting. Perhaps she told herself she deserved them since Laban turned the tables on her in the name of custom and had deprived her of her right to marry first. Whatever the reasons, her actions brought... Whatever the reasons, her actions brought disaster. Okay, we're going to take our first break there. Now, still on page 120 of the notes, and we're still in chapter 31 of the scriptures. Now, of course, when Jacob leaves, he doesn't say a word to Laban about it. He just goes, takes his stuff. So you can imagine when Laban sees Jacob's gone, his daughters are gone, all this livestock's gone, he must have had a fit. Which he did, and he went after Jacob to do who knows what. But read verses 17 to 53 with me. Then Jacob arose and put his children and his wives upon camels, and he drove away all his livestock and all his property which he had gathered, his acquired livestock which he had gathered in Paddan Aram, to go to the land of Canaan to his father Isaac. When Laban had gone to shear his flock, then Rachel stole the household idols that were her father's. So it was the allegedly good daughter who wasn't really the good daughter. She was beautiful, but beauty and morality have no relationship with one another. And Jacob deceived Laban by the Aramean, Jacob the Aramean, by not telling him that he was fleeing. See? So he fled with all that he had, and he arose and crossed the Euphrates River and set his face toward the hill country of Gilead. When it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob has fled, and remember how they put a 3 days distance between it, so that's why he didn't find out for 3 days, then he took his kinsmen with him and pursued him a distance of 7 days' journey. So he was pursuing him at quite a rate. Okay, because Jacob was 3 days ahead of him, and it took Laban 7 days to catch up to him, but Jacob was still moving. So you can see that clearly Laban was moving much faster than Jacob. And that's because Jacob had children and all kinds of stuff. God came to Laban the Aramean in a dream of the night and said to him, "Be careful that you do not speak to Jacob, either good or bad." Now, what's God's main concern here? Why is God so involved in this? the Abrahamic covenant. God is going to watch over this covenant in spite of the shortfallings of man. Laban caught up with Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the hill country, and Laban with his kinsmen camped in the hill country of Gilead. Then Laban said to Jacob, What have you done by deceiving me and carrying away my daughters like captives of the sword? Why did you flee secretly and deceive me and did not tell me so that I might have sent you away with joy and with songs, with timbrel and with lyre? Do you believe that? I don't believe that. He's already shown that he's a liar, like all the rest of the family. How he deceived them with Leah instead of Rachel. And did not allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters. Now you have done foolishly. It is in my power to do you harm, but the God of your father spoke to me last night saying, be careful not to speak either good or bad to Jacob. Obviously, Laban was polytheistic. He had his household gods, Jacob had a god, you know, so forth. Now you have indeed gone away because you longed greatly for your father's house, but why did you steal my gods? Then Jacob replied to Laban, because I was afraid, for I thought that you would take your daughters from me by force. Now Jacob doesn't know anything about these household idols at this point. The one with whom you find your God shall not live in the presence of our kinsmen. Point out what is yours among my belongings and take it for yourself. For Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen them. So in a sense, he put Rachel under a potential death sentence. So Laban went into Jacob's tent first, of course. He figured Jacob was the culprit. And into Leah's tent, and into the tent of the two maids, but he did not find them. Notice, Rachel was his favorite. He checked all these places first. Now Rachel had taken the household idols and put them in the camel saddle, and she sat on them, and Laban felt through all the tent, but did not find them. She said to her father, Let not my Lord be angry that I cannot rise before you, for the manner of women is upon me. So he searched, but did not find the household idols. Then Joseph became angry and contended with Laban. And Jacob said to Laban, what is my transgression? What is my sin that you have hotly pursued me? You know, Jacob now gets angry because he says, the idols aren't here. What's this false accusation all about? Though you have felt through all my goods, what have you found of all your household goods? Set it here before me, before my kinsmen and your kinsmen, that they may decide between us two. These 22 years I have been with you, your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried, nor have I eaten the rams of your flocks. That which was born of beasts I did not bring to you. Torn. That which was torn of beasts did not bring to you. I bore the loss on myself. You required it of my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. Thus I was, by day the heat consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sheep fled from my eyes. These 20 years I have been in your house, I have served you 14 years for your two daughters, and 6 years for your flock, and you have changed my wages 10 times. If the God, now this is a significant statement he makes here. If the God of my father, the God of Abraham and the fear of Jacob had not been for me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the toil of my hands, so he rendered judgment last night. Okay. Let's go to the bottom of page 116 where it says 17 to 53. It really should say 17 to 42. That's how far this section goes. Okay. Laban pursues Jacob. These idols symbolize the right to inheritance and also guarantee protection, or so they thought. Perhaps Jacob would one day return to Haran and claim all of Jacob's estate. In other words, what Laban was afraid of was that if Jacob had these idols, he had a right to Laban's estate. And if Jacob had them, once Laban died, Jacob could come back with them and lay claim to all that Jacob owned, and his sons would get nothing. Perhaps Jacob had one right to return to Haran and claim all Laban's estate. Upon failing to find the idols, Laban entered into a covenant of peace with Jacob to protect himself from Jacob. He was scared of Jacob now. And it wasn't really Jacob he was scared of, it was Jacob's God. You can see that anything he tried to do against Jacob, something, somewhere, some God was protecting him. In the seven-day pursuit east of the Jordan River, just as Laban was catching up with Jacob, he was warned by God in a dream not to speak good or bad to Jacob. God's protection of Jacob and of the covenant were in full force. That's very important. Jacob accused... It should be Laban. Laban accused Jacob of robbing him. Jacob denied it and put a death penalty on any one of his people who had them. But Laban was deceived by Rachel. There's another liar. His family, everybody's a liar. And you know, you get the feeling, you know how Terah was the father of Abraham? You get the feeling he must have been a liar. This is a line of liars. Jacob denied it and put a death penalty on any one of his people who had them. But Laban was deceived by Rachel, her own father. She put the camels in her camel sack. She put the, should be idols. Idols in her camel saddle in her tent. Laban never thought that a woman would defile an idol by sitting on it when she was unclean, which Rachel claimed. So he did not search under the saddle. Now Jacob made a counterattack. He reviewed the hardships he had undergone for Laban for more than 20 years, taking financial losses while caring for Laban's flocks during the heat of the day and the cold of the night. The fear of Jacob, the same God Isaac feared, was with Jacob, and God had seen his hardship and hard work. So unless he was going to just turn into a pirate, Laban didn't have a finger to stand on, however you say it. Additionally, God had proven himself strong and real on the behalf of Jacob. And he had appeared to Laban in a dream. So Laban didn't become a believer, it doesn't appear, but he came to believe that Jacob's God was a powerful God. Okay, 43 to 55. Then Laban replied to Jacob, "The daughters are my daughters, and the children are my children, and the flocks are my flocks. And all that you see is mine. But what can I do this day since these my daughter... to these my daughters or to their children whom they have born?" He's kind of trying to backpedal a little bit. He doesn't want to admit that the reason he's not going to do anything is because he's scared of Jacob's God, so he makes some kind of excuse. "So now come, let us make a covenant." Why do you think he wants to make a covenant with Jacob? He's afraid of him. He wants to make a covenant with peace with Jacob. "And the flocks are..." "So now come and let us make a covenant, you and I, and let it be witness between you and me. Then Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar. Remember, a pillar is a place where God has appeared. Jacob said to his kinsmen, gather stones. So they took stones and made a heap, and they ate there by the heap. Do you ever notice a meal generally accompanies something of importance here? For example, when the angels came to see Abraham, there was a meal. It's often a meal. Laban said, this heap is a witness between me and you this day. Therefore, it was named Galeed and Mizpah. Mizpah means the watchtower. May the Lord watch between you and me when we are absent from one another. Now, that wasn't to men as a blessing. Like, if I'm with you for a while and we're going to separate, I might say, may the Lord watch over you and me. But that's not what he meant. He meant, may the Lord watch you and me to make sure we keep this covenant. If you mistreat my daughters, or if you take wives besides my daughters, although no man is with us, see God as a witness between you and me. Laban said to Jacob, behold, this heap, and behold, the pillar which I have set between you and me. This heap is a witness, and the pillar is a witness that I will not pass by this heap to you for harm, and you will not pass this heap and this pillar for me by me for harm. So Laban's probably cutting his losses here. He doesn't want any more trouble with Jacob. He sees the power behind Jacob, the God of Jacob, and he's saying he's doing the best he can to make the best he can out of a bad situation. The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us. Notice he's not recognizing God as his God, but as a God who is powerful. So Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. Then Jacob offered a sacrifice on the mountain and called his kinsmen to the meal, and they ate the meal and spent the night on the mountain. Early in the morning, Jacob arose and kissed his sons. Laban arose and kissed his sons and his daughters and blessed them. Then Laban departed and returned to his place. So after all that, Laban went back home. Didn't really accomplish very much. I mean, at most, he put a boundary between him and Jacob, right? But based on the history of these two men, either one of them at any point in time could have said, this boundary means nothing to me. Who's he to tell me where I can go and where I can't go? So he's doing the best he can here. Okay, going to the notes, page 121. Laban suggested they make a treaty establishing a boundary between them. This was suggested by Laban because of his fear of Jacob, see? Jacob set up a tall stone and then piled a heap of stones around it. So this was a pillar like at Bethel. It wasn't a sacrificial altar. Laban explained that the name means a heap of witness, but he added the Hebrew word mizpah, which means watchtower, entrusting God to look over them. The treaty stipulated that Jacob would not harm Laban's daughters, and that Jacob and Laban would stay apart. Expressing the treaty, Laban used many words to cover up his untrustworthiness. I mean, when you're standing with someone and he's making a deal with you and he's already proven himself a liar, you may as well spit in the wind, is the expression they use. It's going to come back to you and hurt you. The undependable man was now trying to convey that Jacob was a slippery character who had to be bound by a series of stipulations. Laban tried to terrify Jacob as though he was ungodly and needed to be threatened. He even went to call the pillar, this pillar I have set up. Who set up the pillar? Jacob. But Laban's taking the credit for it. And he's doing it to intimidate Jacob. Laban's taking credit for it to intimidate Jacob, knowing full well that Jacob had constructed the pillar. Both the boundary settlement and the wives' rights show that Laban and Jacob wanted to maintain the status quo. But the treaty also marked a break with the East for the family of Israel. This border treaty marked out the frontier in the hill country of Gilead. Remember how before there was really no kind of border? Like, for example, when Eleazar went, he went freely to Haran. This, now there was a border. And so there was a split in the family. The family that had once been a friendly family, now there was a split between them, and they actually became like two families that no longer had the same love for one another. In their last confrontation, God appeared to Jacob and to Laban in dreams for the purpose of separating them. The entire event was complicated by earthly selfish interests, such as Rachel's theft of the idols and Laban's seeking animosity. Interestingly, in the end, God himself was invoked to watch over them. This account later had great significance for Israel. Remember who's the first? This is being written by Moses to Israel, right? And God has promised Jacob that when he travels out of the land, God will bring him back. So think about how Israel felt when they were traveling back, when they left Egypt. And they complained a lot, and better we were back in Egypt, but this was significant to Israel that God would bring them safely back to the land. Same thing with Babylon. This account later had great significance with evil. Jacob was safe from Laban. Israel was safe from Egypt. God would protect and deliver Israel as he brought them back to the land of Egypt. Here Israel would see God's victory. That shouldn't be to the land of Egypt. Just put promised land. It would be better. And as he brought them back there, he would bring them back there safely. Here Israel would see God's victory over idols and idolaters. God's use of dreams for deliverance and protection and the boundary which God would keep is, it should be his people apart from their enemies. All this is important for future Israelites. A lot of typos. Aramean relations, Laban. Oh, I see what it should say. It should be, it's right. All this became important for future Israelite-Aramean relations. Laban was an Aramean. And one of the things that it seems so to me, tell me if you agree with this, if no one had ever told a lie, which of course is ridiculous because we all lie, but if none of these lies had ever been told, all that God has promised would still come true. God didn't need Jacob and Rachel and Rebecca and Laban. He didn't need their lies. But that's what human beings do. They think that lying is going to give them some kind of advantage, and it doesn't. It says in the Bible, be sure your sin will find you out. And that's exactly what happened to Jacob. God did it to Jacob directly when he sinned. We're going to be pretty soon going to be reading about a wrestling match he has with God. And so when we as human beings get crafty and tell a lie, no good can come from it. It might seem as though it's good for us, but no good comes from a lie. You know, when I read the Bible and I say to myself, what sins does God really, what are really heinous sins to him? All of the Ten Commandments, and one of them is not to bear false witness. God hates a lie because he is truth. And it says in John 8:44, He was concerning Satan. He was a liar from the beginning, and there is no truth in him. He equates lying with murder. And how did Satan kill the human race? With a lie. In the end, no good can come from a lie. And the only reason all of these people don't just get destroyed is because God's watching over his covenant and the promises that he made to Abraham. Now, he does love. I'm not saying he doesn't love Isaac and Jacob, but he loves them. And he wants them to, he wants to change their character. That's what he does for Jacob. He changes his entire character after a night of wrestling with him. I'm sure the whole time they were wrestling, they weren't silent. They were talking, you know, saying things to one another. But it was a real wrestling match. But the point is, Jacob became a different man after that wrestling match. And I'll give you a little taste that we haven't got to. When Jacob hears that Esau is coming, he lines them all, he gets his all his people and has them lined up in groups, and he's at the very end, right? After a night of wrestling with God, where is he? At the very front. His whole attitude changed. And sometimes we have to wrestle with God. And it can be painful. The result of Jacob wrestling with God was that he limped for the rest of his life. But better you should limp and go to heaven than walk well and miss out on heaven. Okay, let's close with a word of prayer, and then next week we'll go to chapter 32. Lord, thank you for this time in your word. And Lord, please help us to live honestly before you, because we know that truth is an extremely important part of your character and should certainly be a part of our character. Help us to deal honestly and truthfully with those who are brothers and sisters in the Lord, with our families, with those we do business with. And Lord, really help us most importantly to be honest with ourselves and with you. Because I really believe that we can eliminate a lot of heartache from our lives if we live honestly. In Yeshua's name, amen. You know, when you have a situation where you do wrong and you're called into account for it and you're asked the question, did you do this? And you say to yourself, if I say I didn't do it, I get away with it. But you don't. And whatever you think you're getting away with, in the end result, it's going to be worse for you than if you just admit it. Say, oh, I did it. I apologize. I'll do whatever has to be done to make it right. You can cut it short. That's who? Who's still going to have class this week? Yeah, we do. Don't. We don't.